There is only one force of history that can break the reign of hatred.
It's the B generation. It's day up.
Dreams come true.
Don't tell it like it is. Tell it like it could be.
Wax. Poetic.
Poetry is just as corrupt as figure skating.
I will speak to more souls than our Lord did in his entire lifetime.
Wax poetic.
No, you know, I really just like the sound of my own voice.
Now I've heard everything.
This is Wax Poetic with S.R. Duncan, R.C. Weslowski, and Diane LaLoge on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM.
Good afternoon, and welcome to yet another edition of Wax Poetic. I am one of your guests, S.R. Duncan.
So am I, R.C. Weslowski, over here without a mic.
That's R.C.
And I'm the quiet one, Diane LaLoge.
And we're really happy to have in studio with us today, Roseanne Hamilton.
Howdy.
Hi there. We usually start out here on Wax Poetic as we get the writer to do a little bit of their work, and then we go from there.
All righty. I'll start with one called The Secrets of Ebenezer. I wonder if the gnomes of Zurich have secrets behind the closed doors of bank vaults and ledgers and cold, flinty eyes that only see gold and colors of currencies. Do they have hot, passionate mistresses and wild sex on Sunday afternoons while proper Swiss matrons patrol church aisles and mocha cafes? Do their faces alight with longing and love when sirens call them to bed between hours dedicated to accounts and millionaires hiding their slush funds? You meet with men from Shanghai, Ireland, and other far invested places. Legal eagle with no personal life, your pleasantries calculated to extricate funding and retainers. They would not know you in flights of ecstasy and melting, shuddering pleasures softened with red silk hair and even silkier nectars delighting tongue and skin. You are my treasure, and I am your Aladdin's cave, overflowing ruby red and magical infinities. Disappear us into forever lands, where love is the universe of we.
That's very lush.
Really?
So why Zurich?
Oh, it was an old joke between me and someone about being Ebenezer, and so I thought of the gnomes of Zurich, and that just got me going, I guess.
The gnomes of Zurich? What are they? Who are they?
Oh, I don't know if it's a phrase known over here in Canada, but it's the gnomes of Zurich are the guys running the banks, all the secret Swiss bank accounts, and they're the ones counting all the money, counting the treasures.
I did not know that they were called gnomes of Zurich.
Yeah, that's the, in the Harry Potter movies, that's the reference when they have all the gnomes there at the bank.
Oh.
And that's a play on that.
Well, go figure. You learn something new here every day. So that sort of leads me to, I think, my first question is, you've traveled around quite a bit. Vancouver is actually a fairly recent home for you.
Yeah.
So where else have you?
Well, I lived over 25 years in Europe. I lived a little bit in Great Britain and in France, but mostly in Holland and then in Denmark. So Vancouver's, a recent stop.
But are you originally American?
Yeah, I'm originally from Boston.
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 Cool. And so tell us a little bit about your poetry. Are they autobiographical?
Yes and no. I'd say that it's I feel sometimes like a prism, as if I'm just taking all kinds of light that comes in and reflecting it out in colors. And sometimes it's pretty graphically autobiographical, and sometimes it's more impressions that I've picked up along the way. And I'm not going to tell which is which.
Cool. So what led you to live in Europe for so long?
I'm also a musician.
Uh-huh.
And I started life as a musician over there. and eventually segued into various other things. And I've come full circle. I'm now working again as a musician here, as well as a consultant doing the things that I specialize in.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, that's one of the attractions of Vancouver, is the tremendous musical life.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time in the music scene in Vancouver.
So you play flute, right? That's right.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Do you play like what type of music do you play?
Classical music.
Classical music.
Yeah.
And was there a great call for that in Scandinavia or?
Well,
in
I didn't really play music while I was in Scandinavia. I came to work in an orchestra in the Netherlands, and then the government did a whole bunch of cuts and cut half of the orchestras in the country. So I ended up doing journalism, and, well, what I've done in my life is a great long winding trail of various things. But I did journalism, did a lot of events management, started working with companies on something called paradigm change management, which I'm one of the few people in the world who actually does as a skill being taught. And I've worked with the EU as a consultant for the countries that were coming into the EU, the new countries like Poland and when East and West Germany were trying to make a fit of it. So I've done stuff like that as well.
How do you see what's happening in Europe right now?
Well, I'm not actually following a lot of stuff going on in Europe. I've been quite focused on getting myself established here. So I'm not a political commentator. I just work with people on the ground and in communities and businesses.
Mm. So when you say paradigm shift, what are you talking about? Like,
well, a paradigm is what you... is your belief system about the world around you and yourself. And an example of a paradigm would be the world is flat. And a lot of people for a long, long time believe that the world is flat. And it took quite a lot of daring scientists and people willing to be burned at the stake to change that paradigm, as well as a guy who went and got lost traveling across the Atlantic thinking he was going to China. And eventually that paradigm changed. And that's basically what I do, is I teach people how to do that kind of shifting deliberately. Okay. as a management and executive technique, and also in personal life.
So, you know, actually, just before we went on, there was the commentator in the last program said something about any job that you've had to leave has turned into a better job, or something along that line. You lose it for the right reasons. Now, is that sort of something that fits into your...
Yeah, actually. I always think that no matter what happens to you in life, no matter what you do, you can always use it for something. You might not be able to use it right away, but everything can be used and can be thought of as a resource for life. So that is one of the things I do, is teach people how to see that and how to use that.
Interesting. Do you have some more poetry for us here?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'll stick on the sort of love theme for a while, if that's all right. And this one's called Penumbra. I am golden. My spirit goes sunlight walking. My heart ranges the savanna of your loving. Sweat prowls and whispers down my back. I am golden, my skin limned with morning light, my hair sleepy with feral nights of your loving, our sounds lioning into the dark. I am golden, my eyes horizonless watching you, my body willows to the touch of your loving, we are the saffron butter moon rising. I am golden of your loving.
Oh, you're
saffron butter moon, that's pretty good. I like
that. Yeah, okay. I did too.
Your work is so rich. I mean, the language is so rich.
Thank you.
It's very beautiful.
So do you spend a fair amount of time with on drafts or?
No, they just kind of come. Someone was complaining once about I was spending an awful lot of time writing poetry and I would be better off, you know, spending my hours getting more consulting gigs. And one evening I just spoke a poem. And I said, well, if you don't write it down, it's lost forever because I never remember them. So this one's just for you. And I spoke a poem, and then I said, that's as long as it takes for me to write a poem. They're just there, and if I don't grab them and write them down, they're gone. Uh-huh. So that's just the way it works.
So where's that poem now?
It's gone. If he doesn't remember it, it's nowhere.
Where does your the poetry and the consulting overlap, the two worlds? Do you ever use your poems or poetry in your consulting?
No, I don't. At least not yet. I would say that the overlap is that it's all about paradigm change. And poetry is really the ultimate paradigm change. You go into a poem as one person. You have to suspend your personal reality, your beliefs, in order to get into the poem. The poem will wrap you around itself or take you someplace, and you exit the poem as a different person in some way. And so I don't see that you know, writing, you know, erotic love poetry or working with Chevrolet on how they're looking at whether or not to do electric cars, to me, that's not any kind of a conflict of interest. It's all about energy. It's all about seeing things in other ways. And energy is love. So it all boils down to love, even when you're working with Chevrolet and talking about, well, should they do electric cars? Mm-hmm. And what does that mean to the environment, really?
Yeah.
It's all part of everything that we are, see, and do, and affect.
When you're talking about the paradigm shift, are you talking about you as the poet going through a paradigm shift, or the reader, or both? Or
yeah, both. It's hard for me to say what I'm doing. When I'm writing a poem, I'm not really feeling anything. I might feel some reflections of the emotions that are in the poem, but I'm basically just writing it down.
Uh-huh.
And so I write about things that have been paradigm shifts, but I'm not actually trying to do a paradigm shift when I write poetry. Maybe it's already happened. But I know that when I've read poetry to people, it does take them someplace and they come back in some way or other.
Do you ever get the sense that there's a sort of a gestational period for a poem? Like,
yeah, I think as a poet, I've had a gestational period because I wrote a lot of poetry about 12, 15 years ago, which was actually pretty awful stuff. Now that I went back and look at it, and oh God, did I really write that?
It's the Europeans.
Well, it was the beginning of the European experience, I suppose. But and then I just stopped writing. I actually stopped a lot of that kind of creative activity for many, many years. And then when I came back and started writing, it was entirely different. And it had somehow inside of me had matured and become more sure-footed. And the music was the same way. I didn't play music for a long time. And then when I finally started playing again, yeah, my chops needed a lot of work. But the music was had matured. I'd become a much better musician in the meantime.
How does the music relate to the poetry? Like, do you find that your musical sense enhances the musicality in the poetry?
Well, let's see if I can find one here. I'm sure there is musical rhythm. I mean, I grew up, I was reading music before I could read words. I actually had a lot of trouble learning how to read. I'm ADHD and dyslexic. So I think that music was in me all along. And I love language. I love plays and Shakespeare, and I love poetry because of the music in it. So I'm sure that that's an influence. I have one here called Duet. And it's, as someone pointed out, it's in triads. We are always a little bit mad, we who play. The wind and wood wing their ways between the lines. Our hearts fly swift and true to meet midair. Entwining dance in ways we dare not live by day. We reach some place of peace and fire alight. Listen to us weave the stars and sea together loving. Float in dreams to murmur rhymes of all eternity. We are always a little bit mad, we who play.
Yeah, there's definite flow in that.
But there's also language, the essayist. You are the punctuation of my body, precisely delineating existence with your sensual grammatica. Your hands parenthetical around my hips, your tongue is the comma of my most secret places. Each kiss closes periods on my lips, full stops to my breath while my heart hammers an endless ellipse. You trace my tattoo with question marks, my back arches its own in response, slow and curving. Enough of that. I brace the surprise exclamation point thrust into our conversation. Your thumb traces half a semicolon. I am the other half. You pause. Full colon. May I quote, hyphenate my tongue between the brackets. Your exclamation, a run-on sentence, oh, cannot stop now, ends with E. Cummings.
Oh, that's very funny. Oh, that's really fantastic. Very well done, my dear.
You're listening to Roseanne Hamilton, and she's our guest today on Wax Poetic, Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. So is there a place where people can find your work online or find out more about you online?
Well, I don't really have my poetry online, but I do have a book that I've written called Hard Luck, Good Luck, A Practical Guide to Turning Your Life Around. And that is about paradigm change and how to use that in your life. I've basically tried to boil down a few thousand hours of consulting into 10 pretty short chapters for ordinary people that they can use in their daily life. And that's pretty easy to find. It's www.hardluckgoodluck.com. And then you'll find everything there, and it comes. There's also a workshop and a free seminar that goes along with it.
I was curious if you, the corporations or people that you worked with at the Paradigm Shifts, if they've managed to maintain them, or if they, you know, they got you in to do the consultation, and then wow, it's really great, and they follow through on it for a, you know, a couple of months, and then they go back to their old paradigm.
When I work with a company or mentoring someone, I'm not working to sort of provide a team building entertainment. What I'm doing is teaching them skills which will help them to change how they actually think. And once you start doing that, it's really hard to go back. The bell is rung. What I find is that things start to change and percolate through an organization long after I've left. And I've kept contact with many people that I've worked with, and they keep doing things differently, and they start seeing things differently, and very often it spreads. I worked with a team of engineers, for instance, at a power company in Denmark, and there were four engineers, and inside of 3 weeks, three sessions, they were talking about this and getting other engineers, 35 other engineers in six other power plants, to be doing this kind of thing, thinking this way, looking at questions in this different way. So I don't think that kind of died out after a couple of months. That was simply a wave of change that started to happen. It's very, very powerful because it empowers people to really do things and communicate with each other and use each other's qualities and resources a lot better without feeling as if they're giving something away. They're always getting something back. The scarcity mentality is a huge communication issue in companies. Mm. It also enables people to speak each other's language. Engineers do not speak the same language as marketing people, for instance.
Mm. Well, that's interesting.
I heard most of the answer. I had to go cough.
So, so you're dashing out of the room. Where is he going?
So do you find that's a system that, it's I find it interesting about the being able to talk to different people or different people being able to use the same language. How does that work?
The first thing you have to do is understand where you yourself are coming from. Mm-hmm. What are your points of reference? And then you find out what another person's points of reference are. And that creates a commonality. You might not have the same points of reference, but at least you can recognize each other's points of reference. That creates an emotional connection because you don't feel as if this person doesn't understand me, because already you feel like you can understand them. That then sets up a paradigm where people are trying to understand each other instead of getting frustrated at not being able to understand each other. And you create more and more and more common ground where people can cross over and see things each other's way. And I've worked with people where we had 15 people from 5 different countries, every single one of which came from a different type of meeting culture. People in Sweden in organizations don't meet the same way as a business in Poland. And they had to learn to communicate. We had ex-Stasi, which is the East German version of the KBG, working together with people that they used to watch. And if you can get those people sitting around a table and actually working together, and you know, your Stasi people were actually the people who had all the resources. They knew where everybody was and what they were doing. So you have to be able to get other people to trust them and them to trust other people with that information, because traditionally that was their stock in trade. They guarded it heavily. Yeah. And creating a common ground for them to work from and a mission is the most important thing you can do in a group. And that they can actually see that. They can see beyond their own little patch.
Where did you learn to do this? Or did you make...
On the ground. It just had to do it. When you work with people from different countries trying to achieve a project, you have to find the synergies. You have to figure out what makes it tick. I was also a foreigner. I was also struggling with language. So I had that paradigm already embedded in my existence, so I could recognize it in others, and it worked from there.
You're really smart.
Thank you.
Your poetry's really good. Can we hear some?
Yes, please.
Yeah. Oh, let's see what I would like.
It's really such a pleasure to listen to erotic poetry that's done well.
No kidding. Yeah.
Sometimes it's done so badly.
Sunday Times. My fingertips intrepidly explore the delicate whorls of fine hair around the enticing centrifuge of your belly, occasionally creeping north to map out a taut nipple all in secret under your shirt while you read the New York Sunday Times. You hold me close, absent-mindedly and whole-sensationed, feeding your subliminal hunger through the tattoo at the base of my spine, pressing and rubbing my skin into your desires while you read the New York Sunday Times. It becomes too much distraction. Of a sudden, you push my hand away, concentrating your all on deathly depressive destructions and editorials on ethics, racism, corruption, greed, and perhaps the odd sentence here and there about happiness, while you read the New York Sunday Times. I freeze my erotic instincts, suspending operations and journeys, willing even my wildest thoughts to a standstill as seconds and minutes tick away while you deepen your updates of the world's sins, sighing and fatigued by it all as surreptitiously your hand finds its way once again to my tattoo under the covers while you read the New York Sunday Times. Slowly, carefully, not to interrupt the reported demise of the earth and all her inhabitants, my fingers retrace their steps and my elbow grazes the highlands of your shorts, inspiring a digital holiday south to warmer climes, while your breathing slows and heartbeat rises and the longing urgency of your tattoo upon mine presses harder as you abandon the New York Sunday Times.
Oh, that's so great. Oh, dear.
That's great. That's very good. So, paradigm shift and erotic poetry, are they total opposites, or is there a connection there someplace?
Oh, I think they're connected. As I said, poetry is the ultimate paradigm shift. And there's so many ways to express that. And any paradigm shift is an emotional experience. It's not just a thought experience. And poetry, obviously, is an emotional experience. Otherwise, people wouldn't read it. It's not just an intellectual exercise. I also believe, like a quantum physicist, that everything is energy. Everything is connected. Everything affects everything else. And in my world, the highest form of energy is love. It's all love. It's all energy. It all comes back to that. So poetry is love. Paradigm shift is love. It's all energy. It's all love. You can't exist without it. It's the ultimate sustainable environment.
I would agree with that, having thought about it a lot myself.
That's cool. That's great. So and maybe
even if you take it a step farther into sort of spirituality, into spirituality, sort of going beyond form, you know, sort of going beyond. I mean, we have a human, or we are in the moment in this human form. If that breaks down, if we die, and that transmutes, I don't think anything really changes. You still are left with the same formula, that everything is energy, everything is love, and everything is in movement.
I must have written this one for you.
Yeah.
It's called Dance for the End of Time. Come, dance with me. Dance with our toes curling in the earth, the sand, the leaves of autumn. Let the waves of the sea wash our feet and tell us tales of the Irish coast and Africa. See, the wind in the graceful boughs of the trees is the mirror of our swaying bodies and our arms twining around each other, embracing life. Come, dance with me. The Mother Goddess hums a tune only we can hear. She whispers sweet love in our ears and gently kisses lip and neck and breast. Oh, follow her path. Here at the end of summer, at the edge of the ocean, the waves greet kings and commoners, we and they dancing with equal grace in storm-tossed arms with hurricane hearts. Come, dance with me. We have always danced thus, you and I, since time began, and so we'll dance again, and ever through seas run dry and leaves nevermore shall bud. For us there is no ending. We dance in all our beingness, with eyes and hands and caresses of heart and spirit, which, while delighting in the touch of skin to skin, need in fact no more than thought and word to step through eternity in love. Come, dance with me.
Yes. Right on.
That's great. Roseanne Hamilton has been our guest today on Wax Poetic 102.7. What's the website again where people can get you?
www.hardluckgoodluck.com.
Great, great. And we'll have, of course, this broadcast will be online in the next couple of days on www.poetryradio.blogspot.com. And we'll also have a bio and maybe a bit of your poetry in writing form on there as well.
So could do.
Thanks for that. That's great. People check it out. Check out her website and check out our website. We've all got stuff coming up, eh? Randy, why don't you start off with your thing?
Well, Steve is a part of a show that's happening tomorrow night. I'm part of a show. It's called Mashed Poetics, where we get a rock and roll cover band and they perform an album, a rock album, in its entirety. And we also get a bunch of poets to write new poems in response to each of the songs. So tomorrow it's Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction. We've got 12 songs. We've got 12 new poems. We also have the Pump Trolley Sketch Comedy Troupe doing their entire set based on the album as well. And that starts at 7:30 and it goes till probably at least 11 o'clock. If you're going to go for the whole night, it's $10. If you're just going for the comedy or just going for the music and poem side of things, it's only $5. But if you're going to split it up, make sure you either get there at 7:30 for the first half or around 9 o'clock for the second half. And that's at the Cottage Bistro on Main Street tomorrow night. Again, starts at 7:30, or if you're going to go just for the second half, it starts at 9 o'clock. And then we're also doing a fundraiser for this very radio show and the radio station on Tuesday, June the 1st, which is next Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, at the Café du Soleil, starts at 8:30. We're going to have an open mic. Diane and Steve are going to be doing a little feature set, as well as Paul Fisher and Duncan Shields, one of Diane's favorites, is going to be performing there. Right. We'll be doing a live broadcast interview with Naomi Steinberg, the artistic director of the 2010 Vancouver Storytelling Festival. And we're also going to be recreating the radio play, the classic radio play, The Chicken Heart. Mm-hmm. The whole thing there on stage, cast, crew and the audience doing the sound effects. Great. So that's Tuesday, June the 1st. That starts at 8:30. So if you get there by 8, you'll probably get a good seat. $5 to $10 we're asking for a donation to raise money for Co-op Radio.
Yeah, it should be good. And other people from Co-op Radio you'll see on hand too will be Jay Hamburger, who's in the Arts Rational, artistic director of Theater in the Raw. He's going to be one of the actors in the play, as well as Aiden Saint, who is with Fruit Salad. He's going to be helping us out too. So lots of co-op people there, lots of supporters, and lots of good poetry. So come on up.
And the meat draw.
Woo!
Steve's inevitable meat draw.
My meat draw. I love meat draws.
Also on my side, the Dylan Thomas Circle is meeting on Friday evening. At the Red Dragon Pub, which is the Cambrian, in the basement of the Cambrian Hall at 17th and Main. The doors open at 6:45, and it's going to be video and verse. We have every year we reenact Dylan Thomas's famous poem, The Outing, and we go on an outing somewhere, and we drink our way back to Vancouver.
Is that what you're doing on Friday?
No, that's the yearly event. But we have videos of the excursions over the years with voiceovers and so on and so forth. And
no innocent shall be spared.
No. And then there'll be a little workshop where we take stuff or whatever impressions or images from the video or memoirs or whatever, and everybody gets to write their own little snippet of verse or whatever they want to write, and then we get them to stand up and do their party piece, and we'll do that for a while. And then Dylan Thomas also wrote a number of short stories and film scripts and plays and stuff, so we're going to have some readings of that. What cool. Are you laughing at?
Very cool. Oh, nothing.
He's going like this.
Slowly. No, slowly. We are starting to run out of time here, so I just wanted to keep it going there.
Okay, so the doors open at 6:45, that's the basement of the Cambrian Hall, 17th and Main.
Great. That's cool. And so more information about that, all the other stuff, you can find it on our webpage, www.poetryradio.blogspot.com, or on our Facebook page, which now has nearly 1,000 fans on it. Folks, we're like, I think we're about 11 away from 1,000 fans. So check that out. Look for Wax Poetic, all one word, radio on Facebook. You can find us there and find out about our fundraiser coming up. No apologies necessary on next. That's it for us now. We'll be back again next week with more poetry. Thanks for joining us.
There is only one force of history that can break the reign of hatred.
It's the big generation. It's Bayat.
Dreams come true.
Don't tell it like it is. Tell it like it could be.
Wax. Poetic.
Poetry is just as corrupt as figure skating.
I will speak to more souls than our Lord did in his entire lifetime.
Wax Poetic.
No, you know, I really just like the sound of my own voice.
Now I've heard everything.
This is Wax Poetic with S.R. Duncan, R.C. Weslowski, and Diane LaLoge on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM.